This is Songwriter's Room, and I'm your host, Tomoko. Today's guest is Dirk K. Dirk K is an accomplished guitarist from Germany, currently living in Las Vegas. His career began in the early 1990s, releasing 17 CDs as a recording artist on Sony Records, Bellaphone Records, Fuzzy Music, and now on his own indie label, Deep Records. In addition, he recorded 12 CDs with original projects, such as Lockout Station, Quartet Equinox, Das Überschau. Wow, did I say it right?
That was very good.
Okay, great. Acoustic Journey, etc. And more. He opened up for Sonny Rollins at the Liège Jazz Festival in Belgium, as well as for Al Jarreau in Southern California. He toured America and Europe with his band featuring trumpeter Randy Brecker and saxophonist Andy Middleton and pianist Alan Pasqua. He appeared at Schmidt... I need your help. This is German. I can't pronounce it. TV show.
Schmitteinander.
Schmitteinander.
Nice.
A TV show hosted by Harald Schmidt in Germany. It's like a David Letterman show in Germany, big time. He performed national anthem for the LA Lakers at the Staples Center, receiving a Shaq Hero Award by Shaquille O'Neal. German TV, ZDF, made a documentary about his life in the US in 1997. He performed and recorded with Peter Erskine from Weather Report, and big fan also, harmonica and toots,
Tielemans.
Dave Weckl, Terry Lynn Carrington, great female drummer, Gary Meek, Rick Brown, Paul Taylor, who's also living in Las Vegas, Eric Marienzo, Al Turner, and many more. His newest endeavor, Selfie Nation, combines DJ beats, jazz, and Latin grooves. You can check out his music on dirk.com. We will pick 10 winners to receive the free download of his latest CD, EP Cosmic Boombox, when you message me through my website, tomokomusic.com, and let me know what part of the show you liked. So can I get a whoop whoop? So, ladies and gents, please welcome Dirk K.
Wow, that was awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for being on my show, Dirk K. How you doing?
Great, and thanks so much for trying to pronounce all those German names. I really appreciate it.
Oh my God, that was a real test.
Yes.
You know, I became an instant fan when I first saw you perform. I think it was Tuscany in Las Vegas.
Oh, wow, okay.
And your guitar is so crisp, clear, and sexy. Can you give us some like 15 seconds so we can get a little taste of your beautiful sound, please?
Let's do it.
Yay.
I just happen to have my guitar right here.
So. I know, right? Into meditation mode. I kind of like a high, but your sound is so relaxing and pleasant. Like you remind me of Earl Klugh a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. Big fan.
Yeah. But then at the same time, I can hear some influence of sexy, funky Latin flavor at the same time. So that's what I love about your guitar in the first place. You also play flamenco and rumba too, right?
Yes, I really cover a lot of things from what you said, flamenco style playing, Brazilian style playing, and also I play obviously jazz. So I just kind of combine all those styles together in my compositions, also in just in my music overall. You know.
So. Mm-hmm. So who's your biggest influence?
Well, growing up, when I was 13, I started taking lessons. And the first thing I was exposed to was Wes Montgomery and George Benson.
Mm.
And I want to say George Benson was pretty much my go-to guy for
of course
for years. And then, you know, of course, I listened to Coltrane, Parker, Lee Ritenour, Pat Metheny, all those good things. You know? But of course, you know, also not just guitar players, as I said, also Coltrane or Michael Brecker, you know, everything has a certain standard and is good. And I like melodic music. I can listen to other things, but that's where I'm kind of tended to if I go to listen to stuff. So,
So you did a lot in Germany. What brought you to America?
Well, it was kind of interesting because the first album I released in Germany, which you mentioned earlier on Bellaphon Records, which is a major record label, and we feature Toots Thielemans and Randy Brecker on this album, as well as several other amazing musicians. And
nice.
What happened is that people told me, "You sound too American." I'm like, "Okay." And so I was talking at some point to a big record label, EMI, and they were saying, "You know what? We really don't have a way to export your music. We only import this kind of music." And then I was kind of, you know, stuck there for a minute, and I was like, "Well, I guess I got to move, or I do something else." So I ended up moving to LA, and one of the reasons was that I put my second album out, and it was produced by Peter Erskine on his label Fuzzy Music, and he was about to release it as one of his first batch on his new brand new label. So I was super excited, and I said, "Well, we got to move." So there you go.
Well, that kind of resonates with me because everybody told me that I need to go to America.
Right.
But Japanese is totally different from USA. But I thought in Germany or Europe is big about jazz. So explain to me, what's the difference? What kind of music, difference between Germany and in America, American music?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of differences, but they really appreciate American jazz music. So if you go that's the funny thing. See, I live here now. I'm from Germany, but now I'm able to go back to Germany and tour, which, you know, we actually going to have if the Corona gods will have it. We have a tour in February and March going back to Europe with Steve Ferroni, Dave Inamin, and Dave Siegel. Hopefully in February and March, if it's possible, you know. So, but because I live here and I produce my music here and I'm able to record and get my stuff on the radio, then I can go back and then actually tour in Germany. So if you live in Germany, they're just producing different type of music, which I wasn't really interested in. Not saying it's bad or different. It's just different styles. Like they have their folk music, they have their kind of country music, but they also have, of course, classical music. That's the German thing. But I wasn't interested in that kind of music. So my heroes, my everything I was listening to, they live either in New York or LA. I like the weather better in LA. So I stayed in LA for a long time before I moved to Las Vegas, and it's still great weather in Las Vegas. So.
Right. That's interesting. So the people there love jazz, but it works better when you tour from America back to Germany.
Yeah. So when I used to live in my hometown, which is Aachen, which is close to Cologne area.
You say what? Aachen?
Aachen, yeah, it's kind of a tough one. Yes, hello. It's not a disease, I promise. Anyway, you play in the same clubs all the time, but you are not able to get out of it. You cannot just tour, because you're just known in your little facility, in your little group of people. And so if you want to expand that, you literally have to move. There's no other way to do it.
Do they have a lot of jazz festivals?
Yes, I mean, there's more jazz clubs in Germany than probably in the United States.
And right.
My hometown had probably four or five jazz clubs. They still probably have at least the same amount. And there's festivals everywhere, mostly summer festivals, of course. But they have year-long festivals. But also kind of interesting that they they categorize the music more. Like they have, you know, festival, they mix, they're more like avant-garde jazz or experimental music festivals, which they, I have barely find in the United States. But then you got, you know, stuff where they mix, let's say a David Sanborn with Al Jarreau and mix in maybe an R&B act. So it's kind of it, like, for example, I saw one time Chick Corea and the next band was Joe Cocker. So they mix it up a little bit, you know, to make it interesting. But the festivals are huge, and there's some of the world's biggest festivals are like Den Haag Jazz Festivals in Netherlands, but I think they draw 90,000 people, and it's just
opportunities,
you know. But again, it's easier if you come from here. I want to say it never existed. There's only a handful of German artists who actually were able to tour a little bit, but it's really not very common, you know.
You used to perform a lot, and now how have you shifted in terms of work?
Well, you know, it's a new world, right?
Yeah, you said the keyword, new world order, woo, okay.
It's true, like after, until March, I literally performed 6-7 nights a week in mostly Las Vegas. I did some touring, sometimes LA, but I live here, so most of my work is here. I work with Cirque du Soleil a little bit. All kinds of different outlets. But I also do produce music. I also work as a recording engineer. So right now that's more what I'm doing. So I work with the theater here in Las Vegas, do live sound. So they kind of asked me to stick around until they open up again and kind of maintain and work on their sound system. So that's kind of an intermediate work for me right now. So I'm fixing up sound systems and installing line arrays and that kind of stuff. Then I also produce an album right now for a singer here in Las Vegas, Kai Brand, which we just did the recording with Peter Erskine last week in Los Angeles. So I kind of keep still going a little bit back and forth. So I keep a little bit busy, but it's nothing like it was before. I had maybe 3 gigs in the last 5 months in terms of playing outside of my house, you know. So
yeah,
but I think that's even 3 more than most people have, so
that's true.
Unfortunately, you know, so it's really hard, you know, and nobody knows where it's going either, so it's very interesting.
Right, but you had some hits in your country before, and right now everybody's streaming music. How are you making money through digital music?
When it started in March, I was one of the first guys who jumped on the train and do live streaming on Facebook and Twitch and later on YouTube. And I did really well because not a whole lot of people did it yet. So my fans and people who follow me worldwide really came through and supported me a lot, because in the first 2 weeks, I mean, we were all just freaking out. You know, everything got canceled, you know, like literally every single gig I had. And so that worked out pretty well, of course. And then my CDs and my albums are all available on the usual outlets, from Spotify to Apple Music to Pandora, all those typical things, YouTube, you know, wherever you find music. CD sales, that's a thing of the past pretty much.
Yeah.
And I tell you, I used to live in LA, and we would sell up to 500-600 CDs on shows per week, just like on shows. And those days are unfortunately long over. If I sell one or two, I'm already, wow, okay, that's great. You know, but yeah, so it's all digital now and it's all on the internet.
Yeah, we all gotta shift to a new era. Okay, so you create beautiful music and you're in the studio right there. So let's get to the craft of songwriting. So I'm a singer and not an instrumentalist. So I would love to hear how you create a beautiful original piece like yours. Could you pick maybe one of your best songs and break it down and how you wrote it?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, usually it just depends on a kind of an inspirational phase you have or a situation, you know. Like I have different situations when I write music, but what helps me most is when I have a theme. And I kind of know a production. Let's say I want to go for a smooth jazz production. I want to go for an avant-garde jazz production. Then my mind can tune into what is needed in this particular area of music. So then it makes it more easy for me to write, instead of just like, oh, let all the inspiration come to me. I don't know what I'm even going to do, you know. But once I have kind of a line and say, okay, I want to do this kind of type of album, it makes my decisions a little bit more restricted to where it's going to go in terms of groove, in terms of melodic structure, in terms of harmonic structure. So it trims it down basically. And that makes it kind of easy for me. So one time I start doing a project, I can write fairly fast once I know where I'm going. Does that make sense?
Yeah, we are the same way. Okay, so you start and record from playing on the guitar and then you add other stuff?
Yes, but I mean, a lot of compositions I just do on guitar until I produce them and then I think about the production. What I meant earlier was more like the style where I want to go. Once it's that's defined, if I say, well, I want to do a record something like this, then it's kind of, okay, then I have a lot of points where I'm going to go. Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of comes out of this.
So the little 30 seconds that you played in the beginning, was that from your work?
It was a song called One for My Son, for his birth. So it was kind of inspiration.
That's nice. So walk us through that a little bit. That song was so beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Well, again, there's so the intro is like, so you got this really beautiful. Based on major chords and some sus chords. And
you have reverb over there, right?
Oh, I sure do. So this basically sets up the A part, right? And so
that's right.
And that's kind of a strong way to sort of. Kind of the AB part of it, and then falls back to the intro. Out with the improvisation of the
song. Nice. Since you told me your story, I felt the emotions of your love for your son.
Oh, thank you. Thanks so much. Yes.
That's so pretty.
He's a musician too now.
How old is he now?
He's 20 and he plays saxophone, classical saxophone, so it's kind of a whole different thing.
Of course.
Yes.
Wow. So what's the key to writing songs that connect to your audience, like that you touch your souls?
Well, I think that's what you just said. It's basically, if you feel something, they feel something, right?
Right.
And hopefully it's kind of the same realm.
Yeah.
I hope nobody goes away listening to this. It's like, this was like horrible. He felt really bad. I hope not, so. That's what I feel. I mean, even as being an entertainer, like being entertaining people, if you feel something and you're basically in your zone and you can, I think it always, travels over, goes over to the people and they will feel a similar experience, you know. And that's, I think, nothing worse than just playing down music you don't like or you just don't feel connected to. So you have to be connected to the music or what you do, I think.
Yeah.
And if you write the music, I mean, obviously you're connected to it, you know. So
that's right. That's
Then you just can hope that 20 million people like it.
Right, exactly. So tell us about your brand new touring project, Selfie Nation, next year.
Oh yeah, so that's it's very, I'm very excited about it because, well, the last, this year's tour got canceled and I haven't done one in a while, actually. The last one was with this Quartetta, Quartet Equinox, and that's been a few years. So I'm excited just to go back on tour again. And what's amazing about it, well, I use my all, it's mostly based on original composition. We play a few standards, but very uniquely arranged. Like we do a version of So What with Miles Davis or Nothing Personal, Don Grolnick, but it's just very unique. And then I mostly is my composition. But I was able to work on the CD with Dave and Amin, bass player, and he was very good friends and toured with Steve Ferroni. And I don't know if you're familiar, but he's one of the drummers, I would say, in the world, especially if it comes to this music. So he was obviously known for playing with Tom Petty and Eric Clapton, but he also played with Chaka Khan, the Brecker Brothers, and anybody in between, right? So he's one of those drummers which is just unbelievable. And so to be able to go on tour with him, hopefully next year, would be absolutely amazing, you know. So now we formed this band, and we're gonna do actually some recording in September, not for CD so much then for video, and just kind of getting promo material together, but we're eventually going to do a recording probably before the tour, so maybe late this year or something.
Oh, that will be awesome. Yes. People need to hear you live again, so I hope it will happen.
Yes, me too.
So this is going to be the last question I'd like to ask you. What advice would you give to your 20-year-old self?
My 20-year-old self, okay. I don't know. I have to think about that. What did I do when I was 20? First question. Well, I really did what I wanted to do, so I really have no regrets per se. There's some business decision here and there, sure, you know, where you think, oh, I wish I would have done this, but this is too detailed. Overall, I just been pretty happy where I was. I mean, I did all about 30 CDs now, and they are kind of, you know, my life's work. Most of them are original music. And so I kind of really did what I wanted to do. I started really right with 15, 16. I knew that's what I want to do. So I don't really have per se had a detour in my life where I was like, I wish I would have done this. Not really. I mean, again, maybe some business decisions or something like this, but not like.
Sure.
So I'm actually pretty much there where I wanted to be. Can something be better? Always, yes, of course. You know, can you make more money? Sure. You know, it's not, but you know, I do what I like to do, so that's the main thing.
Yeah, you live your dreams, and you are blessed. Thank you so much for your time today, and I hope soon that I would definitely love to hire you for my next CD project, and hopefully perform live together too.
That would be awesome. Or maybe you want to write some lyrics to my song. I don't know.
Yes, I can.
There you go.
There you go. We're in Las Vegas. Let's do it.
That's right.
Okay.
Well, thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. K. So until we meet each other again, sayonara.
Bye.